Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, our Features Director. Stick around, because later in the podcast you can hear Sophia Wilson's interview with the owners of a beautiful superyacht called Sea Breeze 3, Charlotte Devereux and Simon Greenwood. And Charlotte, you've got a bit more on this story, so tell us more about Simon and Charlotte.
Yeah, I had a little preview listen earlier on today, and they're actually speaking to Sophia from a bay just outside Waiheke Island with dolphins lapping around the waters that morning. So what a setting that is for an interview. Anyway, they were looking for a refit project, and they were planning on doing a sort of year's worth of travelling around, exploring different yachts, looking at different projects, but they found her pretty much immediately over in Brisbane in Australia. And hearing them describe her, you can tell that they just absolutely fell in love immediately. Specifically, I love this, they actually seem to fall in love with the gold-plated taps. They describe walking onto this incredible boat and being amazed at the size of it and the levels, but then they saw this kind of marble sink with beautiful gold taps and a mirrored ceiling, and they're just totally smitten. But they actually bought her at auction, quite a long and torturous one, it sounds like. And she's got a very interesting history, obviously. She was originally called Ulysses and was owned by Graham Hart, and the previous owners had already spent a lot of money on her, actually. So even though she was a refit project, she was in fairly good nick to start with. But I don't want to give too much away and spoil it for you. It's a really great interview and they're a lovely, warm, friendly couple. So do stay tuned for that.
Yeah, I think the refit was a bit of a saga too. I've got hints of the story, and in fact, the full feature will be in the November issue. It's one of our the refit projects we're focusing on in the refit special, which is always the November issue. So make sure you have a listen and check out the feature. But it's a really nice looking boat, this. And it's actually, they charter it as well. So there you can get your own taste of it. But it's got kind of these classic lines. And interesting, yeah, formerly Ulysses. So one of Graham Hart's many boats. So great pedigree. Graham, obviously now the owner of 116 meter Ulysses, built up in Norway. Monstrous boat, that. But Charlotte and Simon have other kind of links to the water. So Simon was actually a grinder on Kiwi Magic, the New Zealand boat that competed for the 1987 America's Cup. Sadly, it lost out to the American team Stars and Stripes 87 in the finals of the Louis Vuitton Cup. And Charlotte's uncle, believe it or not, check this out, he was the first ever New Zealander to compete in the America's Cup back in 1962, albeit not for a New Zealand team, for the Australian team. Yeah, so lots of nautical tradition on display there, so stick around for that interview a little later on. So, listeners, this is our 50th podcast. Who would have believed it? We started this really as a lockdown project because no one was traveling. We thought, what other ways can we reach our audience? Let's start a podcast like everybody else in the world. But we're at number 50. I can't quite believe it. It's been fantastic watching the audience grow over the last year. I really hope you've been enjoying the journey with us so far. We've learnt a lot. It's been quite the learning experience. As we've gone along, hopefully we're a slightly slicker operation now than we were way back at episode one. I remember doing that episode one. Do you remember that, Charlotte? And it was just, it was slightly chaotic. It took about 3 hours to record and piece together.
Yeah, I think the phrase, all the gear, no idea, springs to mind. I remember having lots of things that I was balancing up against other things and none of them particularly making my flat sound less echoey or less like a flat. So I think certainly in sound quality, we've come on in leaps and bounds.
I hope so. I hope so. You had to record it. You had to sit in a cupboard in your bedroom because that was the only way you could get a decent sound. I remember that. And we're all on these slightly crappy microphones too. Wow. God, it feels a long time ago, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So go on then. So if you could pick out a few highlights from the first 50 episodes, what would yours be?
Well, there have been a few great interviews that I've enjoyed. Roland Emmerich, the film director, was one. He famously directed Independence Day and lots of other science fiction films where lots of things sort of blow up. And he was a hard man to pin down. I distinctly remember our deputy editor, Caroline, trying very hard to pin him down as he was moving around the world on his yacht. But she did manage to and had a great chat with him while he was on board.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was quite a saga to get Roland on the podcast. But yeah, Caroline showed amazing persistence there. And his boat's beautiful, actually. It's called Maid Marian 2. It's really, really lovely. Another classic. But I love that podcast because I hadn't paid much attention to his upcoming feature film, which is about the moon hitting the Earth. But it was all revealed in that podcast. I mean, what a plot line. The whole moon hitting the whole Earth. Amazing. Anyway.
Epic.
Epic.
Yeah. And she also, and another of Caroline's interviews was with tennis supremo Rafa Nadal, who actually owns a catamaran. It's an 80 Sunreef Power. And he was on board when she spoke to him as well. And it was just interesting hearing why he went for that yacht in particular and how he likes to spend his time when he's at sea.
Yeah. That's actually our most listened to podcast. That's had thousands of listens, yeah, with Rafa Nadal. And that boat will be at the Monaco Yacht Show. It's called Great White. So if you want to see what tennis legend Rafael Nadal gets up to on the water, have a listen to that podcast, but also go check out his boat at Monaco.
You can peek through the windows. And the one all my friends seemed obsessed with, which I was quite surprised by, is the one we did with Captain Lee from Below Deck. I've said it so many times, but people who love Below Deck just love everything about it. So it's no wonder they can keep kind of churning out episodes. It seems every time I log on to Netflix, there's a new Below Deck series out. But personally, in terms of recording it, I love doing the World Cup of Super Yachts, which we did only fairly recently. If you listen regularly, you'll know this is something we ran as a sort of public poll that people could vote on over on our social channels concurrently with the Euros. And it was just so much fun, A, having something to announce each week and genuinely not knowing what the answer was going to be, but also seeing kind of who you guys chose, even if it was sometimes maddening because it was not always who I would have picked. But obviously that was loads of fun, and it's always great to hear from everyone and hearing what other people enjoyed. But how about you?
Yeah, I loved doing the World Cup of Super Yachts. I'm still getting over Octopus's loss in the final to Eclipse, but I'm sure one day I'll reach some level of acceptance with that decision. I really enjoyed a couple of highlights from me, speaking to Pierluigi Lauripiana back in the early days of the podcast, which he spoke really candidly, actually, about the loss of his Super Maxi My Song when it slipped off that container ship. Great insight into the horrors of waking up one morning and finding out your, you know, the beloved project that you'd spent years and years developing was a total loss. I mean, he was very sanguine about it and did it, you know, accepted it all in with great grace, and has actually gone on to, he's got a new and big motor yacht now, PG, which he's going to explore the world in, which is fantastic, and we'll hopefully get on board that soon to bring you the story. But really interesting guy, love PG, so go and have a listen to that. And it was also good catching with Nico Rosberg, Formula F1 world champion. Actually, he had a Sunreef connection too. He's working with that company as an ambassador, as an eco ambassador, because Sunreef are doing some really interesting things on the environmental front. So yeah, I mean, when we started, we thought Rafael Nadal was a great get and he was a brilliant interview. But ever since then, you know, there's been a string of really big names. Roland Emmerich, I would never have picked that. And, you know, Nico Rosberg, Pierluigi, Captain Lee. Yeah, some great interviews. And they're all available, the whole archive on the website. So please go back and have a listen now. So things are going to get a little interesting coming up for the recording of the podcast, because we've been grounded basically since the first quarter of 2020. Events were cancelled and getting around was too tricky. Border restrictions, quarantine rules, etc. But travel is resuming very tentatively. So the World Superyacht Awards are happening on the 5th of September, and then a lot of the Boat International team will also be in Cannes, and shortly after that we'll all be at the Monaco Yacht Show. So we will do our utmost, our level best, to maintain our weekly schedule, and we'll just have to figure out how to record the podcast on the road, which should prove interesting. I'll just pack my microphone,
traveling light,
and hope for a good internet connection. Yeah, exactly, so that's true. I mean, so suddenly we'll just have to be traveling with a lot more gear. So I think Sophia and myself on next week's podcast will both be in France, although we'll be in different locations. So I guess we'll just try it and see. Fingers crossed. But talking about the World Super Yacht Awards, have you got any favourites, Charlotte?
Well, I like, I've always liked Blue 2. You were saying there was a yacht last week that you said reminded you of Tintin, but that always reminds me of Tintin. It's the kind of the curviness of it and the blue and the gold. And I find it quite kind of romantic, old school, like a sort of storybook yacht. I prefer the exterior to the interior, but I like the interior as well. And yeah, that's a yacht that I would love to own if I was going to pick one.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I love Blue 2.
And it's a bit different compared to, it seems to kind of buck the trend. You know, quite often designers say, oh, it's a radical design. And you think, yeah, I suppose it is, but it's not too different. But that is quite unusual, I think.
Yeah, its lines are just are perfect. Proportions are perfect. That massive long aft deck is glorious. Yeah, stunning boat, Blue 2. There were some really interesting discussions around the categories. And I should just, whilst I've got the opportunity, thank our World Super Yacht Awards judges, because they really went above and beyond this year. So every year, there's about 70-ish entries for the World Super Yacht Awards, nominations rather. And the judges get on all but a handful. They really, they travel around the world on their own dime, unpaid to see all these boats. And this year, it was a nightmare getting judges on boats, an absolute nightmare. As you can probably imagine, there was no Monaco Yacht Show, which is usually a good opportunity. Sorry, no Monaco Yacht Show last year, which is usually the best opportunity to get on a lot of boats at the same time. But, you know, people weren't in the Caribbean or traveling around as much. And then, you know, boats would move. All of a sudden, flights were cancelled. It was a complete, well, it was very, very difficult. Let's leave it at that. But still, they managed to get on over half of all the super yachts. So they personally inspected over half of this year's nominees, which is a phenomenal achievement, quite frankly. And it just it goes to show you their level of commitment. But it also means the World Super Yacht Awards just maintains that specialness about the whole process, because they really do care and they really do have a good look around the yachts that are nominated. So yeah, so winners will be revealed on the 5th of September.
That's right. And you can also see the winners, if you're not going to be in Monaco, in our October issue of the magazine. So that's coming out very shortly. And in the November issue, Stuart mentioned earlier on, we've got this big refit special, which is a great thing to check out if you're thinking of doing some work to your boat or kind of just mulling the idea over and checking the bank balance. But on the features front, we've got a few different sort of refit themed features in the magazine. And what I've been looking at this week, which I've really enjoyed, is one all about rapping. So not rapping as in beatboxing. It's a lame dad joke there that I had to put in. Rapping as in wrapping your yacht with a sort of mega giant sticker, for want of a better phrase, instead of painting it. And it's a bit of a controversial topic, because I think historically it's one of those things that people have looked down on a little bit, but it's starting to become more popular and lots of people are starting to investigate it. So I thought on the podcast I'd just, you know, pull out a few of the pros and cons if you've not heard much about it before. So the first big one, the first big pro, and the reason it's been increasingly popular recently, is time. So as we all know, if you want your hull repainted, you're looking for it to be out of the water for around 4 months, potentially longer, while all that work goes on. Whereas a vinyl wrap can take as little as 2 weeks. So it's a huge difference. And if you're someone who just wants to get out onto the water as quickly as possible, you don't want to lose a whole summer with the yacht in the yard. Particularly this year, we've seen that with people who've been desperate to get out. They don't want to be putting their boat away for all this work. So it's a good option for people like that. And it's a lot cheaper too. So we spoke to Brian O'Sullivan, who's the owner of a 41-metre horizon called Comoqua. I hope that's pronounced right. And he said it was, well, it was the time that made him decide to go for a wrap. He was looking at around $350,000 for a paint job versus $55,000 for a wrap. So he figured, by his logic, even if it only lasted for a summer and it was a bit of a disaster, he was happy to give it a go if it meant he got that whole summer out on the water. But it's turned out he's loved it and is now a huge advocate for it. And if you read the piece, he'll tell you more about what he did on his boat. But they are supposed to last 3 years, and you can repair them and wax them just like you would with a paint job. And they're available in sort of incredible colours and designs. You can get things like marble effect, wood effect, stone effect, or custom patterns if you fancy getting creative with it. But the cons, they do suffer from kind of little cuts and nicks, particularly around the swim platform and near mooring lines and tender bays. Brian said this had happened with the one on his yacht. So you'll need to either keep that area painted or expect to replace the wrap once a year or around that much. Brian had the savvy idea of getting a custom fender made to reduce the damage on his boat.
I mean, I kind of get it, wrapping. I came from a smaller boat world, and it's fairly common in small boat world, because you know you can put custom decals and graphics and you know cool you know completely bespoke designs on your boat, and obviously it is a lot cheaper and quicker than painting, but the penetration in super yacht world is limited. I would say it's much more accepted in the smaller motor yacht and sailing yacht world, but it's interesting that there's a few more kind of testimonial type stories out there like Brian's of people who are doing it and saying, you know, you should really think about this. And actually, interestingly, since Brian's done it, another owner got in touch with me and wanted to be linked with Brian because he's thinking about doing the same thing. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's accepted amongst, becomes more acceptable amongst kind of super yacht peers than it kind of filters out into the rest of the community. I think we're going to see more and more of it. But it's not going to be an immediate massive uptake, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, that's what even the guy from the wrap company in the piece, or from numerous companies in the piece, were saying. You know, it is growing slowly. It's still not the number one option for people, but it's, you know, it's one of those things that in 10 years time, they reckon people will say, yeah, why weren't we all doing that before? It's obvious. You just, you know, replace it every year. The thing I think that would drive me mad, I think you have to be a certain kind of person, because basically you can see the seams where the rolls on the wrap are joined. And I've seen images of it. You would only really notice it if you were right up close to the yacht. And these companies are apparently very good at hiding them and being very clever with it. I think that would drive me absolutely nuts if that was my boat and I could see the join. But Brian said, you know, oh, I'm not a perfectionist. Like, I think perfection is, you know, is a sort of fruitless pursuit. I think it would drive me insane. But if you're someone who just wants to have fun on your boat and you want it to look fairly decent and get out on the water, I can see why it appeals. So I think it's not one if you're a real esthete, but if you just want to enjoy your yacht, which is what it's for, maybe it's a good choice.
Could you tolerate the seams if it was saving you $300,000?
No, zero tolerance of seams. No, if you're already spending all this money on a beautiful boat, you know, I've in my head, I've designed this boat. I've paid for a huge team of people to build it for it. Why would I put a huge sticker on it? No, I want it to be properly, you know, job's worth doing. But see, I'm talking it down here. The people that have them love them and they say it's very good. And as a bit of a clean freak, it kind of appeals, because on all the areas that people put all their hands on and stuff, you can just, you know, redo it every year and it stays nice and pristine. And at some yachts, it was interesting hearing Madame Goo, they've got sort of half and half. So they have some bits wrapped, which they replace regularly, and some bits painted. And that makes a lot of sense to me, especially if it's like a satin white or something where it's not going to make a huge difference. They talk a lot about the gloss, you know, like the gloss is much better on paint than it is on vinyl, but who would notice? I'm not sure that many people would. Anyway, so that's one of the refit pieces. And there's also a big piece about famous super yachts that were rescued from wrecks. We talked about those earlier this year. That's a really interesting read. And some wrecks, in inverted commas. The people selling them are very keen that I don't call them wrecks. They're not wrecks. They are boats looking for an owner to polish them up somewhat, ideally with a lot of money. There are a couple that are kind of up for sale now with fascinating histories that I think are really interesting. And there's also going to be a big piece about how to keep your refit costs in check. So now I think point number one should be get a vinyl. You save loads of cash.
Okay, so you're an advocate now.
Maybe that can be a section of the podcast. Money saving with Chaz. There we go. Vinyl wraps, much cheaper.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, lots of great stories and practical advice in the November issue. So some of the boats featured, we've mentioned, so obviously Charlotte and Simon's boat Seabreeze 3 will be one of the featured boats, as well as Blue Deneme, which underwent a significant transformation. So that's a really good story. So Reece Samuel sat down with the owner of Blue Denim to get the skinny there. So do look out for that. But before that, of course, like you mentioned, Charlotte, is the October issue, in which we reveal all the winners of the World CPR Awards. So definitely keep an eye out for that. Alrighty, let's whip through the news. And then we've got a great data story for you this week, which Charlotte will talk you through. But first of all, the headlines. So Silver Yachts have revealed a 79.5-meter all-aluminium superyacht design named Project Silver Edge, penned by designer Espinoino, who is the kind of almost exclusive, well, I think he is the exclusive designer for Silver Yachts. Silver Edge will be packed with plenty of features, including a winter garden, dive center, and a touch-and-go helipad. Accommodation on board is for a total of 18 guests inside its 1,030 gross ton interior. Silver Edge follows in the footsteps of previous Silver Yachts super yachts, 77-meter Silver Fast and 85-meter Bold. So, interesting Silver Edge. It's definitely a... So Silver Fast is a very smooth, sleek design. Bold is a much more kind of blocky, slightly more contemporary, you know, rugged look. And Silver Edge kind of bridges those two. So it's got the same fundamental lines as Silver Fast, but it introduces a few more faceted surfaces and edges in the Bold mold. So it's quite interesting. Division of those two designs. Meanwhile, the takeover of German shipyard Norbeskrug is now officially complete. The yard has been transitioned to its new owner, Lars Windhorst, the owner of the Tenner Group, which also owns shipbuilder Flensburger Schiffbau. Norbeskrug will now operate as part of the Tenner Group, with production continuing at its existing facility. Says Windhorst, Norbeskrug and its employees complement our strategy in the shipbuilding business ideally, which started with FSG. So Windhorst, a young owner, I think he's in his 40s, buying Norbeskrug there, which is great news, I think, for Norbeskrug. Brilliant pedigreed shipyard with some brilliant designs behind it, not least Artifact, which is up for the World Superyacht Awards, obviously, and Sailing Your A, many, many others. So it's just great news that there's a great future ahead for Norbeskrug with some significant financial backing from Lars Windhorst, which is great. Lastly, UK design studio Harrison Eidsgaard has revealed a 127-meter expedition yacht concept named Rex. The concept was designed for a client who asked for something different and features a helicopter hangar, which converts into a squash court. Rex's future-proof hybrid propulsion package is capable of being converted for hydrogen storage. Very future-forward, that. The 14-metre-long swimming pool can be enclosed in glass to create an indoor pool for use in a cooler climate. Accommodation on board is for a total of 22 guests, including a master suite with four private terraces. Bang on trend, this boat. Brilliant design from Harrison Eidsgaard. A super busy studio. So yeah, have a look at that. It's a really nice boat. So all those three stories and everything mentioned previously, obviously, we'll put links to in the description. So head there now, or just go to the Boat International website where you'll find those a bit more directly. Alrighty, let's talk data. Charlotte, over to you.
Yes, data. As always, this week's is brought to you by BoatPro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence platform. So as we're approaching boat show season, a time when typically a lot of new major deliveries happen, we thought it would be a good idea this week to take a look at deliveries of yachts longer than 50 metres. So how big is the current fleet of 50 metre plus yachts? Well, to date, 838 yachts bigger than 50 metres have been delivered. So that's 746 motor and 92 sail. The average length overall is 67.9 metres and the average age of a yacht in this category is 19.5 years. So if we cast our minds back to 2019, which feels like a long time ago now, I think we've all aged in those couple of years, there were 30 plus deliveries in that calendar year. In 2020, there was a tiny dip to 28. And here's the exciting bit, and here's why we're doing the story, really. We're currently at 28, so the same number of deliveries as last year. But of course, we've still got the rest of the year to go. So the prediction is that we'll end on 39 yachts by the end of December. So a really exceptional year, and more than there have been certainly in recent years. So that's a best case scenario. Of course, there might be some delays. We know it's been a difficult year in terms of boat builds, but it'll be really interesting to see if we do hit that number, which includes just one sailing yacht.
That's a significant increase too. It's not, completely justifying the story. It's not just a little hike, is it? You know, up 39 to 10 more hulls on the water. That's if everything's delivered on time this year. 10 more than last year. And fascinating.
It's not an unrealistic figure either. You know, we know for sure that there are a lot of big projects that are due to be delivered. There's the Lursen Enzo, Victorious from AK Yachts, Roe from Turquoise, and the very exciting Fee from Royal Hasman. So we know that these things are all in build and on track. But if you're interested in where these new yachts are being made, this year so far they're coming from six different countries, with the Netherlands leading. They've got 13 on their books. Italy after that with 9, and then Germany with 3. And if you want to keep tabs on how many boats are under construction at any time and see if we hit the target, then our global order book is the holy grail for this kind of thing. It's got all the info that you need. There's a new report out each November, so there's a new one coming up. And if you're a Boat Pro subscriber, keep an eye out for that. You'll get that before anybody else, and other listeners. You'll be able to see it in print in the magazine later on in the year. And of course, remember, if there's anything that you'd like us to take a look at specifically on the data front on this podcast over the coming months, do give us a shout. We're happy to investigate, however niche or bonkers the request. Email podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com or drop either of us a line or anybody on social media, and we will follow up and have a look.
Yeah, definitely do that, because it'd be interesting to know what you guys, what data stories you guys want to hear. That'd be really interesting for us. So yeah, so a bumper year for 50 meter plus deliveries, a bumper year for brokerage. It's going to be interesting seeing the year-end figures after all this. And like Charlotte said, so the global order book is compiled, what's being compiled now, provides a snapshot of the, you know, the state of the market on the 1st of September every single year. It will be in the January issue of the magazines, the US edition and the international edition. Big data story and global order book story in those issues in the magazine, as always. Alrighty, thank you very much, Charlotte. That's all for data and news this week. Stay tuned for Sophia's interview with Simon Greenwood and Charlotte Devereux about their beautiful yacht, Sea Breeze 3.
On today's boat briefing, I'm thrilled to be joined by Simon Greenwood and Charlotte Devereux, the owners of 30.5-metre Seabreeze. Built in 1976 for Keith Williams, and later owned by serial yacht owner and New Zealand businessman Graham Hart, the couple fell in love with the yacht in 2018. Since then, they've been on a dramatic journey with her, overseeing, and at times even partaking, in a major refit to ensure that she was restored to her former glory in time for the America's Cup on home waters in Auckland. Thank you both so much for joining me today. I know you're on board. Where exactly are you?
Well, we are in the most beautiful bay in Waiheke. In fact, it is so incredible. We've just had an afternoon where dolphins came swimming into the boat, and in fact, a huge big pod of dolphins. It was absolutely magical. So it's a little bay called
Hook's Bay. It's the most eastern side of Waiheke Island,
which is about an hour out of Auckland.
Amazing. It sounds beautiful. And there must have been times, I guess, over the past few years where the idea of just being on board and being able to enjoy the yacht seemed like a distant dream. Maybe we should start at the start. How did you find Seabreeze?
Well, Simon and I had, we had this amazing dream, but probably a slightly unrealistic dream. We wanted to find a beautiful, classic, gorgeous boat that we could do a refit on, and it was one of a journey that we thought would take years to find the perfect boat, but actually, in saying that it was unrealistic, we found her quite quickly.
We were looking forward to traveling around the world and researching boats, and but unfortunately, well, or fortunately, we found her very quickly. We fell in love with the look of her incredibly quickly when we saw her.
So we found Australia. So we're obviously based in New Zealand, and we discovered her in Australia. So we went on a journey to see and to find out a little bit more about her.
And can you remember the first time you stepped on board?
Most definitely.
So it was in Brisbane, Australia, and we had flown in and went straight to the boat, and it was quite incredible. We met with the agent, and we saw this absolutely stunning boat. We'd seen photos of her, but didn't quite know what we were going to expect, and definitely not a super yacht. I think at that point we just thought we were going to be looking at this beautiful classic girl. And when we hopped on board, and it just kept on going, there was like so many levels and different areas, and it was like this beautiful sort of magical journey going through the boat and discovering all these little spaces and beautiful areas.
When we got inside, the first thing we saw was the gold-plated hand basin in the day head. And we were blown away with the marble top and the gold and the mirrors on the ceiling.
And the history, I mean, it just absolutely, she just had this gorgeous feel about her. It was definitely love at first sight.
And you ended up purchasing her through auction, is that right?
That is correct. It was kind of crazy, actually. We were in, my mother was in hospital at the time. And so we bid on her, and it was kind of crazy because it kept on rolling over the bid. It was on auto bid, and it kept on going, which it seemed like it was hours and hours that it kept on going. And finally, we were obviously bidding against somebody. And finally, it was kind of down to the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We sort of looked at each other, which is, oh my God, what have we done? It was kind of a feeling of excitement, yet kind of daunting
reality.
But incredible all the same.
And do you know how she'd come to be up for auction? Do you know how much of her backstory do you know?
Well, yes, well, she's got quite a lot of history, lots of beautiful history. Her not the original owner.
The third owner,
Graham Hart, who is one of our New Zealand's very well known and probably world known businessmen. When he purchased her, she was called Ulysses. And he became, this is probably his definitely his smallest boat, and he's gone on to
it was his pretty much his first super yacht.
So when he sold her, he changed the name to Sea Breeze, and he took the name Ulysses. And since, all his beautiful boats have got bigger and bigger over time, have become Ulysses. So that was a little bit of history about Sea Breeze, but also, as you said, 1976, she had four owners, and through the journey, we've seen some beautiful work that people have done on her, and the time and the effort and probably a huge amount of money was spent to keep this gorgeous girl looking absolutely.
Luckily, when we found beautiful. Her, she had millions spent on her, and she was in pretty good nick, so we were pretty happy about that.
And how did you celebrate when you finally found that you had secured her?
Well, we were in hospital, as I mentioned, with my mother. Sadly, she was not very well at that point. And we had purchased a bottle of champagne, but we had no glasses. So I think we toasted with a hospital cup with, at least we had a nice champagne, but that we toasted in the hospital. Through a lot of sadness that we'd both gone through, it was kind of one of those amazing moments where we felt very, very blessed that we'd actually got to this point. And that was the first of many celebrations that we went on to have.
We're hoping it wasn't a urine sample cup that we toasted with.
Yeah, always had to be careful when in a hospital. And how soon did you decide to do the refit work? Was that always part of the plan when you bought her, or was it something that kind of came apparent as she became yours?
No, we always wanted to put her back into survey. So she was built in 1976 to Lloyd's survey. And then she went out of survey after Graham Hart sold her. So we put her back into survey. And so there were no grandfather clauses available to us anymore. And New Zealand's survey standards are pretty tough. So we found ourselves having to meet all the modern survey requirements to make her meet the requirements of New Zealand in 2021. And we're happy to say that we managed to achieve that. And she's better than she's ever been.
And how did you go about it? How did you decide which yard to use? What work you wanted to do? What was the process involved?
Well, the wonderful thing was we spent 6 months, well, 6 to 8 months on board Seabreeze and really getting to know her and deciding what we wanted to do, what areas we wanted to focus on. We probably were a little bit naive in a sense because when we did go to several boat yards and get quotes and talk about what we were going to do, we really didn't think it was going to be such a major refit. So it was probably good that we didn't know, because whether or not we would have gone on that journey, but it was good. It was a fantastic and emotional and roller coaster journey, good and bad. So we ended up going with a boatyard in Whangarei called Oceania, and that is about 4 hours out of Auckland. They definitely had what we thought would have been a perfect boatyard for us, because she, Seabreeze being the size that she is, there's not that many boatyards in New Zealand for that size boat that we need to take up when we take them out of the water. So Oceania was top of our list, and we started the refit. What we thought would be a 6 month journey ended up to be a two year refit, thanks to many things like COVID and being a beautiful old girl. She definitely had some more work that we hadn't anticipated.
And what was some of the major work that you did do, both kind of structurally and internally?
Well, what didn't we do? Yeah, we rebuilt the from the upper deck, or the bridge deck. We wanted to be able to support the number of people on board, and so we now can take 99 people, which makes us one of the largest luxury super yachts in New Zealand. So we rebuilt and composite the upper deck, and so that was a pretty major thing to do. We had to put in a new collision bulkhead further aft. So it was about a half a metre, 600 mils aft of what it was, which then required us to rebuild the entire crew area. So that got completely rebuilt. We ended up having to put a completely new deck on. On the bridge deck, we laid down new teak. On the aft poop deck, we also laid new teak. We reconditioned the teak on the main deck. And then we refitted the interior completely, and Charlie probably spent pretty much the whole time sourcing from around the world, fixtures and fittings and coverings, and she can talk about that.
By the way, Charlie, that's me, if you want.
Don't worry, I'd gather that. So how was doing the interiors? What were some of the challenges and some of your favourite parts?
Well, I guess the big challenge was that the boat was in a shipyard and she was undercover, so we didn't have easy access to her. So there was a lot of vision boards.
Well, everything was covered with cardboard, so we couldn't just go and...
So you just take fabrics and beautiful furnishings and match them was a little challenging. But at the same time, I had such a vision of what I wanted for Seabreeze that made it quite exciting, because I didn't want to do something typically nautical. I really wanted to go with her 1970s kind of eclectic feel. So it was very much exciting project, because I decided that anything's possible, really. So I didn't have to stick to the the rules. Well, it was definitely that was the fun part, but I guess there was also challenges with COVID when ordering fabrics that were coming from around the world, they got delayed. Beautiful Italian light fittings were supposed to be, I think, 3 months. It took nearly a year. So we had delays anyway, but if there wasn't for that, we would have actually, there were things that would have really held us up big time. So it was one of fun, yet just having to also be a little bit creative in a sense, because what I couldn't get, I had to find elsewhere. And it also meant that I could, because I wanted to keep with her beautiful old heritage style, I could go to gorgeous antique shops and find beautiful fixtures and fittings to really sort of be in keeping with her style and heritage, and keeping the very much a mid-century modern feel, which was also really, really cool to do.
And is there one particular element or one part that you did that you're particularly proud of?
Gosh, there's so many, I guess so many different areas I love. What would be for you, what do you think is the best area? I mean, for me, the interior, but particularly the bedrooms, I just loved. So finding gorgeous linen and really working with what we had. It was about restoring and refurbishing and resurrecting. So taking what we had, for example, in the salon, we've got this gorgeous table, and I just loved it, but it just didn't have, I wanted to give it a little modern feel. So I had it painted in a beautiful, very, very pale pink lacquer, and found this amazing pink pale pink onyx, and we underlit it just to give it an amazing, just unique feel. So it really, it just brought the room to life.
I'm most proud of everything that Charlotte did.
No.
Yeah, everything that I was part of was more engineering and, you know, engine room work, and we redid the logs, and which are, you know, where the shafts go into on the boat, and all the sort of engineering side of things, but the visual side is most beautiful, which is what Charlotte did.
And you were pretty hands-on, I understand, Simon, in terms of actually partaking in some of the work yourself.
Yeah. There's photos of me with, like a pretty dirty face polishing stainless steel, and so we got into it. Yeah, Charlie and I both were working hard on the boat to bring her home.
In the last 3 months of the refit, in order to make it to the America's Cup, we moved to Whangarei, where the refit was being done, and we based ourselves very close to the shipyard. And we had our family at one point, that was over Christmas, we had our family working on board. In fact, my youngest daughter painted the anchor chain. We had friends and family sanding, as well as like 40 other people working on the boat at the same time. So it was a huge amount of people. And just because we had such tight deadlines at that point, it was definitely all hands on deck, literally.
What we did was pretty insignificant in terms of the rest of the people working on board. I mean, the boat was crawling with, electricians and engineers and woodworkers and painters. And, yeah, so we were just being there, living it.
And the America's Cup was always kind of the dream, I guess, to have her ready for, and that was why there was such a rush at the end. How special was it to make it and be there on board her?
Oh my gosh, that was the most incredible moment after this 2-year incredibly hard journey. Launching, we got into survey 2 days before, so we went straight into the America's Cup. We had an amazing crew and people that have been working in the industry for years, and I guess with my hospitality background as well, we had it all lined up ready to go. So people really, we had some amazing guests on board, and people thought we'd been in charter for years, and the boat has, you know, as everybody said, it just had this most amazing feel. So we were so caught up with everybody's excitement. With being on the boat, it wasn't just about the America's Cup, but they were just loving the whole beautiful vibe of Sea Breeze. So we were absolutely ecstatic. It was definitely one of those most amazing kind of pinch me moments where the beautiful weather, New Zealand at its best, with a great great energy and so much enthusiasm for all the work that we'd done. So it was definitely, it was a very special moment.
We had people that said to us that it was the best day of their lives, and one lady actually said it was better than my wedding day.
I hope her husband wasn't in earshot.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, they said even if the racing wasn't on, it was still one of the best days. So it was, it was a really, really special time.
We had like 100 people for the last 2 days. So it was pretty amazing. Lots of energy. We were the loudest boat.
And Simon, you were a grinder on Kiwi Magic in 1987, is that right? So it must have been quite surreal to go from that to coming back and watching from your own super yacht.
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. Yeah, I mean, had Grant Dalton told me that he was going to be sailing these foiling monohulls that would do three times faster than the speed of wind, and they're going to be wearing crash helmets and scuba gear, I would have asked him what he was smoking. It was pretty incredible, really, the difference between 1987 when I was on it to now. And Grant was on the crew with me. It was pretty special, really. It was an absolute spectacle. They are amazing boats, these new America's Cup boats. Pretty special.
And how did the America's Cup feel, you know, with COVID and everything that was going on? Obviously, the international crowd that's normally there wasn't there. Did it have a very different feel, or did it still felt like an America's Cup?
Well, it just, there was so much excitement and there were so many people. I think everybody was, well, all of New Zealand was behind it. So it didn't feel like we were missing people. In fact, it was so busy. It was so packed. There was this amazing sort of sense of excitement. And we sort of felt also that the rest of the world were watching. So we went on our own. It was, you know, the way that everybody got behind it from all the teams, from Ineos, who actually we had them staying, the ground team was staying at our place. So we got caught up in the whole excitement with all the teams. So it didn't feel quiet at all. In fact, it was quite the opposite. I couldn't actually imagine, as much as we really would have loved to have had all our international visitors, there was such a buzz in the air that we didn't even notice in the air.
There was hardly any parking space on the course. It was unbelievable.
I think that every single person that had a boat was out there. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And how much does it mean to New Zealand for the Cup to have been retained?
Oh, well, that is, without a doubt, that's so special and so important. We just have to keep it in New Zealand.
Mm.
Working on that.
And do you get a sense as well that it's a big boost for the maritime industry as a whole, having the Cup and knowing that it will be in New Zealand again?
Well, let's hope it is in New Zealand again. We need to have a chat with Grant to ask him to retain it here. He's, I think it would. I think all of New Zealand would want it to be here. I think we would be disappointed if it wasn't here again. We spent so much money on infrastructure and preparing for it, and then COVID hit, and so to get another bite of the apple would be absolutely fantastic. So it would be wonderful if we could actually host it here again. It would be amazing with all our international friends and family coming to enjoy it with us.
And Seabreeze has obviously been a kind of passion project, but she's also designed to be a business. What are your plans with her moving forwards?
Well, you're absolutely right. One of our key things was not just to have Seabreeze for our friends and family, but to have a boutique hotel on water, essentially. So we always wanted to have her in charter and to be able to not just do overnight trips, but also to have amazing events. And it kicked off with America's Cup, and then we've had some incredible corporate events since. And even down to now in our winter time, there's some beautiful winter cruising, and we've got gorgeous well-being retreats, amazing chefs coming on board. We've got so many interesting projects coming up that it just keeps it busy all year round and so much excitement because it's a little bit unique, that's given us the opportunity to really to be able to offer something that hasn't been done in New Zealand. So very much, as we call it, a botel or boutique hotel on water. There's lots of exciting things ahead, and we're looking forward to, as Simon said, more of our international visitors coming as soon as the borders open. We can't wait.
And it's obviously hard to plan anything at the moment, but is your intention to keep her in New Zealand, or will she go a bit further afield and be available for charter there as well?
So in New Zealand, and when it opens up in the islands, particularly Fiji, we will be cruising there in the New Zealand winter. Mind you, in saying that, we sort of couldn't imagine that we'd have anything happening in winter, but it has been such a gorgeous winter as we're on the boat now, and it's just magical. So we do hope to go to the islands, but if we can't get there next winter, we'll be in New Zealand. We've got the most beautiful cruising grounds, from the Bay of Islands to Great Barrier Island. It's just sensational and gorgeous in winter as well as summer.
We had a large pod of dolphins swimming next to us yesterday.
Yes.
Which was amazing.
Yes,
we loved it.
It was amazing.
Beautiful.
And we've sort of touched on it already, but how does she stand out from the other yachts that are available on the market in New Zealand?
There's nothing like Sea Breeze, to be honest. It is very limited. As far as classic, beautiful old girls are concerned. But for some reason, my family seem to be drawn to these old boats. So when saying that, we've had in our family, we've done several refits on beautiful old classic boats. So we seem to just hunt them out. Pretty mad, really. Sometimes we go, we should really just go with something modern, but it's just not our style. We love boats with history and style, and you know, something that tells a story, which is very much Sea Breeze.
And obviously at the moment, because of COVID, you're not getting international customers, but is there a lot of domestic interest in her still?
Yes, there is. We're not having so much the overnight charters. But definitely events has been a big thing, which we were quite surprised about. We were visualising initially that she would be chartered for a week to 2 weeks, but we just don't have, I think, at the moment, the locals that can spend that sort of money, to be honest. But to have a beautiful day out on Sea Breeze, for people to be able to escape for a day or maybe overnight, that's definitely been fantastic. But it's more the corporate market. We've been inundated with so many businesses wanting to book here. So coming up, everybody's booking now for Christmas events and gorgeous parties and weddings. We've had a lot of wedding inquiries, and we're just starting to get those penciled in the bookings now. So not just weddings, but we're actually doing this gorgeous offering where guests can come on board for the wedding, and then we take them to Waiheke, and they have this beautiful, I'm a marriage celebrant, so marry them, have a gorgeous celebration, and then they go ashore to Waiheke and have an amazing party, and then the couple come back on board and we sail away for their honeymoon. So, and then they have an amazing night on board Sea Breeze. So that's
multiple nights.
Yes. So there's some exciting, beautiful things happening. And then we actually, during the day, we've also been doing, over the quiet period, we've had something called the Ocean Office. So corporates can also book on board on dock. So when it is in a colder time, even though it's actually super cozy on Sea Breeze, it's lovely to be able to come on board, and we can have corporates that can book we've got so many different areas, but for meetings, for gorgeous lunches, for fabulous day events, that's also an option. So that's been a great, we had to pivot a little bit, so that was also another great opportunity for us to make it more accessible to people that probably couldn't do an overnight charter. So it's been it's made us sort of think a little bit outside the square.
And do you have anywhere personally that you want to go or that's in your sights or that you want to do with her?
Ooh, where would you like to take her?
Well, we always talked about going to the Med, but now we're talking about going around New Zealand.
Well, I guess what we've discovered is, as much as we would like to one day, there's so many incredible places in New Zealand, and it's so, you can be in, like, yesterday or even today, we're in a bay where there's nobody here. It's so quiet and so special. But if you want to be amongst it, you can go into some of the bays and where there's go ashore and there's fabulous restaurants and great bars. So we've got the choice to be somewhere completely isolated or somewhere that's buzzing. So we've really decided to do that. We'd love to do more exploring, particularly further past the Bay of Islands.
Bay of Islands is beautiful, yeah.
And further on to the...
north of the Bay of Islands?
Which is called...
Yeah, well, there's so many places. The Great Barrier Island is beautiful. So we were there the other day doing a charter with a bunch of guys wanting to do some fishing, and that was just wonderful. Yeah, Kawau Island is only 3 hours north of Auckland, and so many beautiful places around here. So right now, it's probably for us, while we have COVID, it's about New Zealand for us, really. Yeah.
And the islands, Pacific.
Yeah, but we can't get to Fiji because obviously they've got some problems.
But who knows, one day maybe we'll take her over to Europe. There's so many, and sail the world. Lots of possibilities.
And having been through everything that you've been through with her, does it make you want to do it again, or is Seabreeze a yacht for life now?
Well, we're looking for another couple of boats at the moment, actually. We just love restoring and refitting boats.
No, definitely. This is it. We've had moments where we really hated her, and we used to call her the B word. But now we actually love her again. Through all the trials and tribulations and the mad roller coaster journey that we've had, we absolutely adore her, and we just can't imagine not having her. So we really see her as part of the family, and for our children and their children to be able to be on Seabreeze, we see her as being a boat for life.
Well, I don't want to take up any more of your evening on your beautiful boat. So thank you so much for your time this evening, and hopefully you'll be able to get some international visitors to come and enjoy her soon as well.
Thank you. Well, we welcome you, and we can't wait for the borders to open and to have all our friends and family, because all my family lives in England. So looking forward to getting them to New Zealand to be on Seabreeze too. So we can't wait to welcome you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.